Welcome to All Have Another. I'm your host, Lindsay, and I'm so happy that you're joining me today. If you are new to the show, welcome. And if you're coming back, welcome back, and thank you for your support. This is a show where I bring on women who motivate and inspire and hopefully encourage you to do something good in your life. And I hope that you just feel like you're part of this conversation, whether you're out on a run, cooking dinner, whatever you're doing. I hope you just feel like you're here with us. Today you are listening to episode 16, and we are talking with Michelle Gonzalez. Some of you might know her from NYC Running Mama on Instagram or her blog. We talk about Michelle's time at West Point and her 3 deployments. We also talk about what her day-to-day life looks like now that she's back to being a full-time working mom after staying home with her boys for several years. Of course, we also talk a little bit about running and what future goals look like. Before we get started with Michelle, though, I want to ask you, if you are enjoying this podcast, would you be so kind to rate and review the show on iTunes? It is the best way for people who might be interested in this type of conversation find us, and I would really, really appreciate it. Today, I want to read to you Molly T, currently one of my favorite podcasts, fun, lighthearted, sometimes serious, and great to listen to on the run. Thank you so much for the review, Molly. And Adam Wren, in an era of veneer-covered conversation, Lindsay Hine demonstrates an innate ability to push her guests beyond surface-level conversation. The results, episodes that are both fun and deep. I love that. That is so what I'm going for. So thank you so much, Adam. And I'd love to hear from you guys on social media. Just interact with about the conversations that we're having. Tweet myself or tweet Michelle, send me a message on Instagram, whatever. I am Lindsay Hine on Twitter and LindsayHine626 on Instagram, and I would love to hear from you. We will go ahead and get started talking with Michelle now. Thanks, everybody.
Are you in your closet?
Well, here's the story. We're at my parents' house for the weekend. Well, I've been here since Wednesday, and there's like 10 kids in this house. So I was like, I was going to go to their office, but I'm like, it's kind of next to the living room. So I felt like my mom's closet was the safest place to be.
Yeah. My nephew slept over last night.
Oh.
My sister and her husband, it's like their anniversary weekend. So we like helped out to watch him. And so we took him to soccer with us. And now they're going back to my sister's to go in her pool. So I'm going to meet them there. So like the house is quiet right now.
Which Ooh, is nice. So is it 4 kids then? Your 2 and her 2?
So yeah, well, her daughter is from a previous marriage. So
okay.
She's actually with her dad this weekend. So
okay.
it's just going to be the 3. Yeah.
Okay. So, aww. Yeah.
She's 8 months younger than Ryan. So it's like, it's chaos.
Ryan your older or your younger one?
Younger.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my younger sister has 3 kids and my older sister has 1. And so there's so many kids. And it's awesome sometimes because they run around together and they play.
Yeah.
But then when they get tired, they start fighting.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're at the age where they are, they're like siblings,
mm-hmm. all,
which is great. And it makes me so happy that they like have that connection already. But
yeah.
They fight. Like they are physical with each other.
Yes. Is it boys? Is there more? So is it all other boys? The daughter, she has a daughter, and then she has the younger son, right?
Yes. And then my other sister has a son. He's only 5 months old, so he's not really involved.
Oh, he's baby.
In the craziness yet. Yeah.
So what were you running this morning? What were you doing?
Just an easy. I'm still, like, post-Boston. I'm still not. This has been, like, the toughest recovery for me.
Yeah.
I'm not forcing it, though. Like, I just don't feel good. I know something is, like, whether it's, like, I just need more recovery or it's, like, my, like, I'm not getting nutritionally what I need or vitamins, whatever it is. Like, I'm just, like, the runs just haven't been good, so I'm not.
You're just running for fun?
I'm just running for fun. I haven't signed up for any goal races yet for the fall. I mean, I have a couple of halves, but, like, you know, part of me wants to do a marathon, but the other part of me right now is, like, I'm not there yet to be like, I want to do that again. Like I
oh
am
gosh.
Like,
yeah.
So I'm just, you know, it's like I woke up, I am not really on a training plan. I'm just run whatever I feel like.
You need that.
Hard runs right now. Like, it's been good. I just, I don't want to say it's upsetting, but, like, it's a little unnerving to not feel like yourself day in and day out. Like, I'm just, I mean, it's what, like, 8 weeks now since Boston? It's not like it was yesterday. It was a while ago, and I'm still not. I just don't feel, like, there's been runs where I've had to stop and walk home, like, like, just, like, heart rate out of control, like, shakiness, so, I don't know.
Didn't you do that, I thought I saw you posting about that Inside Tracker?
I did, and, you know, not surprising, my vitamin D and ferritin are, like, crazy low, so I'm taking pills, like, I'm doing all that, and you know, from what I'm read, it could take anywhere from, like, 6 weeks, 8 weeks or more to, like, not even to get to normal, but just to kind of bring the levels up to the point where you feel better. So, yeah.
Is your iron low?
My iron was okay.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so I think, like, day-to-day iron I'm okay, but it's, like, the stores that are super low. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I think it's just a combination of things like that, just a really hard training cycle, like, not really having any sort of, like, break. Like, I mean, I do take a break after, but it was, like, three really, like, big cycles for me.
Yeah.
Saw improvement. And so I think, you know, if I don't feel better, I'm not going to do a mat. Like, it's no big deal. Well, it is, but it's not, you know? Like, the thought of not doing a marathon, it's like, oh, my goodness. But
makes you sad, yeah.
At the same time, I'm not going to sign up for one if I'm not going to be 100% invested.
Yeah.
Like, physically and mentally, and I'm not there, so.
Yeah. Well, when did you go back to work?
Right after, the day after my full marathon.
Oh, yeah. That's right, yeah.
So I did this whole training, this was the first training cycle with juggling, like, you know, training and work, so.
Yeah.
I think I'm still learning, like, my limits. I don't think I, like, you know, you like, everything's a test, and so I feel like this cycle, I think I maybe pushed a little too hard, but how do you know until it's too late, you know, like.
Well, your body, you're probably exhausted from going back to work full time, and, like, I mean, don't you get up at, like, 4 a.m. and then run and then work all day and then come home and put your kids to bed, and, I mean, that's just crazy.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, it's. I do. I'm in bed early, though. Like, I mean, I'm usually in bed by 8:30.
The kids go to bed, and you go straight to bed.
Yeah. So, you know, it's reverse. Like, some people, after the kids go to bed at night, have, like, those hours alone. And, like, that's kind of my morning. Like, I'll get up well in advance of running, and Paul gets up with me, and we, like, sit on the couch and, like, you know, that's, like, our, you know, because he works from home a lot, and he owns his own company, so. Mm. He does a lot then, like, so we'll have coffee from, like, 4:15 to 4:15.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, like, and then I'll go running, and he goes up and works for, you know, an hour and a half or so, which then gives him the freedom to spend more time with the boys in the afternoon, you know? So
yeah,
it's crazy, but, like, it works for us, that scheduling. So we're both early risers, so it just, that part makes sense.
So you get up at 4, you hang out for, like, when do you start running? Like, do you hang out for, like, an hour or something? Like, drink coffee, read, or whatever?
Yeah, if it's an easy run, I'll probably start around 5 or so, a little bit before, a little bit after.
Yeah.
And then, like, during training, like, if I had, like, a speed work or something that was, you know, I'd start, like, probably 4:45 or so. Because, like, my cutoff time usually is around 6 to be done.
Mm-hmm.
That gives me time shower and get dressed and, like, do my hair, do my makeup, and try and be out by 6:45. So I've gotten good with, like, cutting down on that time.
I, like, the reason I can't work out that early is, like, I need longer time to go to the bathroom and, like, wake up, and my body is just, I mean, I will go to the bathroom within 15 minutes of waking up, but I still feel like everything is just, like, not ready to go. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's been, like, what was, like, one of the harder things is, like, setting that window. So they're not, you know, and honestly, like, I know some people who get up and they're running 15 minutes later. Like,
yes.
I need at least, I'd say, 45 minutes. Anything less than that, and I don't feel, you know, the coffee, bathroom, you know, it could be as much as an hour or so.
Okay. That's interesting because I feel like some people just get up and go in 15 minutes. I'm like, how are they like not pooping their pants while they run?
No, I mean, that's like a prerequisite to the run starting.
It is for sure. So, okay, we're getting into your work life and your running, but before we get into all that, because I have a million questions, let's tell everybody who you are, like just a little bit about Michelle, your background and all that good stuff.
Yeah. So, I'm Michelle Gonzalez. I am from Staten Island, New York, which is where I was born and raised and spent all of my childhood here. After graduating West Point, I was in the military for 6 years, and so that kind of took me away from New York for 6 years, or just, the school was in upstate New York, so I wasn't here, and then post-school, I was in Arizona and Texas, and then off and on with Iraq because I was deployed a couple of times. And then, you know, it's interesting. I never expected to move back to New York, like especially Staten Island. Like it wasn't really what I envisioned for myself. But I found that the older I got, the more I wanted to be close to my family again. Like that, I think I realized how much I missed them when I wasn't seeing them every day. And so after the military, I moved back to New York City and I lived there with my sister for a bit. Mm-hmm. And then, got pregnant, got married, and then eventually decided to move back to Staten Island, which was a surprise to my family and even to me. So
how long did you live in the city?
I lived in the city for just about a year.
Okay.
And then I lived in Jersey with Paul, my husband, for a year. And then we moved back to Staten Island after that.
So I'm just so intrigued by this. I mean, it's like I know you as a friend, and I still can't wrap my head around the fact that, like, what intrigued you and inspired you to go to West Point and be like, I want to serve in the military. You know, I mean, it's just like feminine, girly, female, and I don't even think I'm that girly, and I don't really view you as that girly, but still, I'm like, she's a badass. Like, how did you do that?
Yeah, so it was, you know, like, to be totally honest, it wasn't necessarily all about the military, per se. I mean, it was, and that part intrigued me. It was more, like, I'm very, like, structured, I'm very, like, regimented, and so that aspect of West Point and the military is what I felt connected to. Like, that's really what I felt like called me the most.
Okay.
But I mean, it was not even, I didn't even know at West Point. I went to an all girls high school, like,
okay.
like super, you know, Catholic school. And I didn't even know about West Point until my sophomore year, which is when my sister, my older sister, she's a year older than me, she started getting, like, you know, all the college booklets in the mail, and so I was, you know, interested, and so I would glance through them, and I saw, you know, about West Point, and immediately I was like, oh my gosh, that sounds like so exciting, and I don't want to say fun, but just, like, challenging, and, like, I felt like, and it was just something that I just felt connected to. It's really hard to explain. So I went for a visit. It was like a 3 or 4 day visit program that they do. So you can, like, shadow a cadet. And I remember coming home and just, like, walking in the door and telling my parents, like, that's where I want to go. And they were stunned. And, you know, at the time it was before 9/11. So it was a completely different situation. I mean, going to West Point, you would then serve in the Army, but it was peacetime. And so there wasn't the concept of, oh, you're going to have to deploy, you're going to have to go to Iraq or Afghanistan. It was like, oh, well, you'll get to, you know, see the world and, you know, serve your country. And then after 5 years, you'll be done. And so that's kind of why I decided it was, I'm not saying I wouldn't have gone if it was 9/11, but my parents didn't try and, they were very open to it. I think there would have been a little more resistance from them had it been after 9/11.
Right.
And so they were just like, well, if this is what you want to do, like, we'll support you. I don't think my mom was like overly excited about the idea of me being in the military, but you know, it was something I wanted, and so she wasn't gonna dissuade me, but she also wasn't like, you know, celebrating the fact that I this is where I wanted to go. And so you know, and it's a tough decision though to make, because I was, you know, you're 17. I think about the men and women now, and I have, I mean, not that I don't have respect for like my classmates and I, but I have so much respect for the young men and women who are making the decision now, knowing that they are going to be, you know, deployed someplace. Like, I think it's like much. It's something that I'm like incredibly amazed by, that there's still an overwhelming desire of people to want to do this and then spend their life, you know, putting their life in harm's way. We didn't know that at the time that that's what was going to happen to us. So,
what year were you when 9/11 happened? Like, what year in school were you?
I was a junior. And okay. The interesting thing is, you know, you can go to West Point for 2 years and not owe anything, time or money or anything like that. The day you start your third year, the day you walk through the academic building on your junior year, then you owe. And so even if you leave, say, 2 days into your junior year, you now have to pay back or serve for the previous 2 years. Mm. And so 9/11 was a month after my junior year. And so, you know, it changed my world, because I mean, we knew we were eventually going to get to peace, and I still remember the class I was in, and just like that entire day, like it was just a very, to be there when it was all playing out, and then you know, it's something that I'll always remember. You know, it's like when our parents talk about like when JFK was killed, and they remember specifically, like that's what it was like for me with 9/11. So plus, you know, being from Staten Island, a lot of friends of mine whose parents were in the towers, one of my cousins was in the tower, and so I also had a lot of personal involvement in what happened. So,
it had to feel so much more real to you being from there and knowing people and having all those connections. Like you said, I remember exactly where I was too. I was in geometry class and in high school, and you know, but I mean, I'm so disconnected, even though I'm in the United States. I was in Indiana and I didn't have any like New York connections, but you're also at West Point, like you know, you're at a military, called a military academy, really?
It was
so did you know people that had to go overseas right away?
So, you know, there was talk amongst, like, my classmates and I, and, like, within the student body, because there have been times in the 200 and some odd years of West Point where classes graduated early, so they would be able to send us to wherever we needed to be, but that didn't happen. So we, you know, you finished your time at West Point, and then upon graduation, you went. The girl I was actually rooming with, she had a boyfriend who had graduated the year prior, and he was involved in like the first batch of troops that went over. So I experienced it through her with that one. I mean, and there was no communication at that time. Like once we deployed, like we didn't have the structure and all of that set up, and so people who deployed, my husband was actually also part of that. There was no, like, you deployed and there was no communication, basically any of any kind with people back home, which was terrifying.
Yeah.
And things were built up, and so, you know, I was able to talk to my parents either email or phone calls or whatever. So it was different. But the early on, I mean, even like showering, basic things, they didn't have for a while. So by the time I went, it was a different story.
So you deployed three times, right?
I did. The first time was super short. My unit was already over there.
Okay.
And I graduated West Point, and then, so after graduation, you spend time learning whatever branch you were assigned. And so I spent 6 months in Arizona learning about Intel. And so when I graduated from that course, I met my unit in Iraq. And I was there only a couple of months. It wasn't like entire deployment. Yeah, and then I went back 2 times after that.
And one time, weren't you gone for like a year?
Yeah, so, the second time was 12 months, and then the third time was 15 months. So, okay. And honestly, like, the 15-month one is like, it's what did me in. Like, I knew at that point that the military, like, and that's still to this day, like, not that I regret it, but I loved everything about being in the military. And I, with the exception of a deployment, I would have loved to have stayed in and made it a career because I truly loved it. It was just, I missed my sister's pregnancy, the birth of my first niece. Like, there was just way too many things at home that I was missing. And I wanted to start a family. And so I was like, there's plenty of people who, like, moms who have children and then deploy. Mm-hmm. And, like, I couldn't wrap my head around that. And so I knew after that deployment that, you know, the time had come.
So you had already met Paul, your husband. So did you meet him at which deployment did you meet Paul?
My second.
Okay. And so
His second and his last. Yeah.
Where did he get into the military though? Was he West Point?
He was, but we didn't know each other at West Point. He was 3 years older.
Okay.
So when I was a freshman, he was a senior. So okay. There's very little social interaction at West Point between freshmen and the upperclassmen. Mm-hmm. Like, you're actually not really supposed to have any sort of, like, personal, you know, you're supposed to like call them like sir or ma'am. It's very, you know, and so there are always cases, but I didn't even know who he was.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you met on your second deployment and you guys were like really in a group of like really good friends for a while and then you started dating?
Yeah. So we were, it was four of us, that became like the best of friends. It was, you know, it's hard to look back on a deployment and say it was fun, but honestly, being with these individuals like made that time together fun. I mean, I had every, you know, meal with them. We used to do long runs together. Like, it was just, and we built these friendships up that, I mean, are still there today. I mean, we still are good friends with the other two guys and we love them. And, you know, and so our relationship started after that.
Oh, after that. So after you got back?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. But you kind of knew, were you kind of like, I like
that
guy?
Yeah. The feelings were there. It was just, you know, like there's so much else going on. But, you know, you wake up one day and all of a sudden you're like, huh, all of a sudden you're like, you feel the attraction.
That
it wasn't even something that I can say like was there to begin with. Like it honestly grew. Like the more I got to know him, the more like I realized I fell in love with him.
Well, and that's, like, has to be the healthiest way to start a relationship, honestly, because you're friends first, and you know you actually like them as a person. You're not just attracted to them.
Well, and, like, you know, you take out, like, the ability to date, and, like, I mean, I was in a uniform the whole time,
right.
And, like, no, there's no alcohol involved. Like, it's just, like, you just get to know the people on a, like, very, like, I don't know, like, it was just, so after we got back, we started dating, and then he was done with his time, and so he actually moved to New York to go to business school, and I was still in Texas, and then I had another deployment after that.
Was that so hard to go back?
That was really tough.
Because you were already in a relationship.
Yes, I was in the relationship, and like I said, my sister was pregnant, and I just felt like there were all these things and all these, like, my heart just wanted to be someplace else. And so, you know, I honestly was like really depressed for a while, that deployment. And like throw in then that like my job was like extremely stressful, like just like, and so I just felt like very overwhelmed at times. And I mean, it ended up being an extremely gratifying deployment. I mean, professionally, and like just as like a unit, like as a whole, it was just a very successful deployment for us and for me personally. And so, you know, I'm definitely like, I'm grateful for that experience. Because I feel like I learned a lot and I grew as a person and like professionally.
Yeah.
So
what did that feel like when you like got off the plane and you're like, I'm on American soil, I'm not doing that again?
It was, you know, and I still, I ran a lot that deployment, and like I would, we weren't allowed to listen to, like, to have headphones in, so I would have, like, the iPod shuffle, like, the little one, and I would tuck the earbuds under my sports bra and, like, just turn the volume up, so I would actually, like, hear music while I was running, but, like, no one would know because you couldn't see, couldn't see them in my ear. And so there were certain songs that, like, were, and I, of course, I don't remember the names of them, but it's still to this day when I hear them, it takes me back to those runs where I would, like, dream of being back home. And it's still, like, I remember the excitement that I even felt there, knowing that it was coming to an end, and, like, I'd be home and I'd start the rest of my life. And so, yeah, it was a really emotional homecoming.
Okay.
Paul was there when I landed. And so that was, like, super emotional. And it was, yeah, so it was great.
Were you ever fearful, like, what if I don't get to go back and start my life? Like, were you ever fearful of your life?
So, you know, I yes and no. I mean, the being in Intel, and I was at the divisions, I was on division staff, so I was, you know, I wasn't even on, like, a small FOB. I was on a, like, I was in Baghdad. It was the most built-up camp for, you know, soldiers, for Army, and not just Army, but just in general. And so it's not like I was going out every day, like, patrolling or doing anything like that. But, you know, there were, because all of the leadership was with us, there was a constant, threat of indirect fire, you know, and, like, our dining facility got hit a few times. So, like, you know, the chances were not as high as, you know, the people who were doing that every day, but there was always the chance that something could, you know, like, running outside, like, I mean, I ran on the camp, but, you know, yeah, indirect fire was probably the biggest. I did go out occasionally my position, I briefed, like, the senior leadership of our division, like, the generals on a daily basis, and so they would occasionally take me, well, not just me, but, like, in general, like, they would take some of the staff officers out patrolling with them, just so we would, you know, I'm doing part of the intel. They wanted me to see firsthand what was going on outside the wire. And so they would take me out with them. But, I mean, I was with their security. Mm-hmm. And so it's pretty, that part was safe. But still, you know, you're in the, you know, the up-armored vehicle driving on the roads. And you're, you know, it's interesting. My first deployment was, you know, being the most junior. That's the deployment where I was, the least safe. I was the executive officer of a company, and so I was in charge of overseeing, like, the maintenance of the vehicles and all of that, and so I was leading convoys, like, I don't want to say every day, but a couple of times a week, I would be leading convoys, and back in 2004, we didn't have the up armor, and so you actually drove with, like, the doors and windows off. It was just open. And, like, you just keep your weapon out. And so,
oh my gosh,
that was the least safe I was. And then, like, the longer I was in, you know, I was company level, then I was brigade level, then I was division. So by the time I was a division level, you know, you don't leave as much and you're in a pretty built-up camp. So, yeah.
I can't even wrap my mind around little Michelle doing that. I mean, like, not that you are not fierce and strong. It's just, like, it's crazy.
Yeah. It honestly, like, it feels like a different lifetime ago, like, to think back and be like, I did that. But, you know, when you're in that moment, like, this is all you know. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, this is what you're trained to do at that time. And so, you know, you don't really think about, like, you know, it definitely... I don't regret anything with them. Like, I'm so grateful for, like, my time in the military. I met some of my closest friends. Some of my girlfriends from West Point are just, you know, the type of friends that were all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see each other now, you know, everyone's married, so we don't even have weddings as the excuse to get together.
Uh-huh.
But, like, when we try and Skype, actually, occasionally,
oh,
like,
fun.
All of us, we'll all Skype together.
Oh, fun.
And it's like we're back at West Point, like, you know, ordering food to eat in our rooms. And, like, it's
so
just
fun.
The type of friends that you can go months without talking to, but you pick up right where you left off. So, you know.
I love that. I just had I ran with one of my friends yesterday, Brooke, and that's exactly how we are. Like, we didn't run very far, but I wanted to run like 10 more miles just so we could keep talking, because you don't run out of things to talk about.
Yeah, and it's like the type of friends that you never feel like you have to do anything.
Right.
They'll always be there because you share that bond and the friendship is just so secure. So
you don't feel pressure to like constantly call or text or whatever. Like, you know, it'll be the same. That is the best. Yeah. Well, mad respect for you. Seriously. I think about that all the time. And I, on behalf of everybody listening, thank you for your service. Okay. So, and I know you started running when you were over there and you trained for Boston over there and all that. I want to get into when you got back, you mm-hmm. got pregnant, you guys got married, you started staying home with your boys, right? Well, with your first son.
Yep.
Okay. And then was that a culture shock adjustment for you?
Yeah. So, you know, I had spent so long dreaming about how I was going to come home and like work in the corporate world and like make lots of money and do all this stuff, and came home, lived in the city. Like, I did it for a year. Mm-hmm. Loved it. I was on the Upper West Side. I was two and a half blocks from Central Park. I ran in Central Park every day.
Aww.
Like, I had an unbelievable job. The company was located in D.C., but they set me up with my own office in the city. But I realized, like, I missed the interaction for work. Like, I was literally in an office by myself. Like, the office was, like, as big as this room. Like, I would go to work and, like, not see anyone, not really talk to anyone except, you know, with my coworkers who were in D.C. And so I got pregnant with AJ, unplanned, because Paul and I were not married. I mean, we were living together at this point, but, like, you know, definitely not planned. And so we decided we wanted to get married, not because it was something we had to do, but it was going to happen anyway. And we were like, you know what, like, we've been together for so long, why not just do it now? And so we had a quick wedding in Central Park, which was
amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, I had plans initially to go back to the job after AJ was born, but I kind of had this, like, coming to Jesus moment. It was like, what? Like, I spent so long in the military. I want to have a job that I, like, absolutely love beyond anything. So maybe I'll just take some time. You know, financially, we were in a position that I'm grateful that I was able to do that. And it was supposed to be, like, 6 months. You know, it's like, oh, I'll start. And, you know, so 6 months. And by that point, like, we were, like, knee-deep in trying to buy a home. And so I was like, well, I'll just wait a little bit longer till we get settled, you know. And then I got pregnant with Ryan, again, unplanned.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like, well, I'm not going to go back to work now. I'm, you know, 8 weeks pregnant, like, let's just wait till after he's born. And so then, like, that got pushed. And then, you know, I had plans to go back, but then an opportunity for Paul came up where, you know, to buy this company with his former boss. And so it's located in Buffalo, New York. So the first year, he was up there a lot. I mean, I didn't, like, openly share because I'm cautious to be like, oh, I'm single parenting.
Right.
You know, like, you just, so he traveled, like, I'd say 2 weeks of the year, 2 weeks of the month, he would be gone the entire week.
Oh my gosh.
So basically, like, every other week he was gone. So at that point I was like, how can I now go back to work full time? The boys aren't in school full time. Mm-hmm. And I would basically have to get a job that was paying a crazy amount of money to pay for their childcare. So
right.
I was like, okay, like, we'll put that on the back burner for the time being. And so it reached the point last summer where his travel with work had died down. And I was like, this is the window, because I'd like to have another baby. And so it was like, if I have another baby now, like, it's going to set us back like 2 years before.
Right.
And I'm already out of work. I had already been out of work almost 5 years. And
yeah.
So you reach the point where you're like, I just have to, like, grab the bull by the horns and, like, get back into it before it's too late. Because, I mean, 5 years is even a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so that's what we did. And so I'm grateful that I, you know, was able to get a job as once I really decided, like, okay, like, I had been applying to jobs, but it was like, half-hearted. It was kind of like, oh, well, if it happens, it happens. And then over the summer, it was like, I'm going to do this. Like, I'm going to do it. And so it was a fairly quick process once that happened. And, it's been over 8 months now. I think about 8 months, I'd say.
What is the age gap between your boys?
20 months.
Okay. Okay, so it's really close, but not like, they're not like, Irish twins or whatever.
No. So, yeah, AJ is January and then Ryan is September. So, like.
So, if anybody listening doesn't know Michelle, she has the blog NYC Running Mama. Did you start writing that when AJ was a baby?
I did. You know, and so I started it because, so the New York City Marathon has a program every year called the Foot Locker Five Borough Challenge.
Okay.
They pick five runners, one from each of the five boroughs of New York City. And the basic thing is you run together as a team for 13 miles, you know, half the race, and then you race to the finish.
Okay.
And so, I had heard about this because, you know, being from Staten Island, I decided to apply. The top, you know, they change the topics every year. Like, some years they look for teachers or, like, other areas of employment. The year I applied, it was, you know, like something along the lines of like running, helping you through something. And so I talked about like the military and especially that deployment, because that's really when I felt that running was more than just something I had to do, you know, because being in the military, you have to run, like take the test. But at that point, running like truly became something that I loved. And so, you know, I was picked to represent Staten Island. And one of the requirements that they asked of us was that we be on social media a little bit more. That's when I joined Twitter, and that's when I started the blog. And so it was October of 2011, and I ran the New York City Marathon in November. And so that's basically how it started. It wasn't even something that I was like, oh, I'm going to keep this up forever. It was like, okay, well, I'm going to do this until after the marathon. But I found that it was, that this whole world existed that I didn't know. You know, like, I had never read a blog before. I had no interest in Twitter. Like, I'm usually, like, I kind of, like, I don't like to just do things because it's, and so gave me something to do when I was at home with AJ. Like, I felt like I had this connection with people that were going through the same thing as me, that were moms, whether or not they were working, or just in general, female runners in particular. Like, there's this, like, bond. It gave me something to do while I was home with AJ. And so
you started writing about your runs and what you were training for. When did it take off? Because, I mean, your blog is huge. It's crazy.
Yeah, I guess I'm definitely more, I think Instagram is what's like the, like I still blog.
Yeah.
Just not as frequently. I think Instagram started to get bigger for me around the time of the Ironman. I think that's really when I started to feel like I was, you know, and then, like, I feel like, though, with social media, if you have, like, a decent number of followers, people will follow you because you have a lot of followers.
Like, and is everybody following her?
Yeah.
Like, there's something to it.
Yes. And so I feel like once I started to, like, gain some followers, I was gaining more followers because I had a decent amount of, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so I think, I still think that's the case, that, you know, maybe whether or not someone, like, finds what I'm posting interesting, but it's like, oh, well, all these people are following, so there must be a reason, you know, like, that sort of thing. So, I don't know.
How do you, like, you know, because I know people have to approach you all the time to sponsor things and, you know, brands that want you to be on board with them. Like, how do you decide who you're going to work with?
I actually don't work with too many brands because I feel like I like to keep my Instagram, like, mostly about my training.
Real life,
Like, I post most of my runs, like, regardless of, like, and so I feel like it will lose its authenticity mm-hmm. if I start like sharing products or this or that.
Yeah.
You know, I do share, like, if I do, it's with a product or something that I've used before
mm-hmm.
And that I actually believe in. And so, you know, like with Saucony stuff and
right.
Garmin, like, I wear their stuff, I use their stuff. And so it makes sense to just, I'm going to take a picture of my
I know.
watch. Like, it's, so I think I'm just cautious because I feel like I could potentially make money going that route, mm-hmm. but then it's like it's no longer then about my training and, you know, me. It's now about what I'm selling.
And so you can get obsessed and caught up in what's the next best thing. Like, how much will they pay me to post this? And it's a game. It's a business.
It is. I think I have the luxury of not feeling like I have to do that because
yeah.
I work outside the home, and so
yeah.
like my Instagram, like my social media is just mine. Like, it's not,
yeah.
I don't feel like I have to sell it to anyone to make a living.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think I have a lot of flexibility with that. That others who are using their social media or their blogs to make a living, they may have to not do that.
And that's, yeah, some people are doing that full time. So is it weird when you're, like, for instance, so you and I, gosh, was October at Chicago? Was that the first time we met in person?
Yeah. Well, we had the quick interaction at Boston, but we didn't talk.
That's so funny. Yeah. So in 2014, I was running Boston and you and Leticia were cheering at mile 25.
Yeah.
And I knew you guys were, I don't know if I knew you were at 25. I knew you were going to be somewhere towards the end though. And I was so excited and I was just running for fun. So it's not like I was like, you know, dying at the end of the race. So I ran over and gave you guys a hug. That was so cool.
Yeah. We didn't have any, we kind of play that one like from the hip. We didn't have any, we went to the start to watch, you know, as many people start as we could. And then we like hightailed it out of there and like basically running to try and get to see Meb run by. But we heard he won as we were doing that. And so we ended up, you know, at that spot, which was a great spot.
Yes.
Here. So
did you see a ton of people?
We did. That year was nuts. You know what made it easy? We were right after the 40K split. So we would get the 40K split and then be like ready to see someone. And so we were able to see so many people run by. It was that's why it was so good. It's hard when you're so far from a timing map, you know, but we were like maybe 2 minutes after. So we'd get the split and be like, all right, let's start looking.
I always get nervous that those don't update right away though.
Yeah. You know?
They must have been.
Yeah. Those were good. Those were pretty accurate. So
yeah. Okay, so then we met. So then we actually got to hang out in Chicago this year for the Saucony, the 26 Strong project.
Yes.
That was so fun.
It was the first time where, like, I actually got to, like,
mm-hmm.
It was the second time I got to see Jenny, but even, like, Laura, she pushed me.
I know.
Ran with me the last few miles of one, and that, we had never met before.
I love that.
And she like jumped in. I had seen her at a previous mile, but then she drove and she said she had no intention of running with me, but she could just tell I was going down that dark hole. And so she ran like 3 miles with me, and like I still like to this day, like she's the reason I ran that race. Like
uh-huh.
that was her. It was a bad moment.
Uh-huh.
For me, like it was a pretty dark moment and
dark headspace. Yeah.
So we didn't really get to chat much because like finished and like I basically like collapsed at the finish.
Uh-huh.
And I was starting work the next day and we were 5 hours from home. So it was like, you know, so that was the first time that I really got to like sit and chat with her too. So it was just, you know, like girls that you've been following and you are friends with, but like you're not real life. Like you don't, I feel like you don't fully know someone
mm-hmm.
until you actually, you know, like look them in the eye and talk to them. And so, it was like that weekend was so special for me.
Was so fun. Laura's the best. That is so awesome. And she was in a weird position too, because at the end of someone's marathon, when they're going through like a dark space in their head, I feel like you're kind of like, do they want me to run with them? Like, is this going to annoy them? Is this going to push them? Like, how do I make that decision?
No, and honestly, she knew exactly how to talk to me.
Uh-huh.
Like, the right mix of supporting and pushing. Like, uh-huh. It was that perfect mix. And it was just like, it was amazing. And my husband got some great pictures of, like, me looking like,
uh-huh.
I'm ready to cry, and she's, like, talking to me. Like, it was great. It was awesome.
He was probably like, who is this, like, angel woman that just, like, appeared and started running my wife in?
I know.
So, yeah, it was, like, Jenny, Laura. I'm going to miss people if I start naming people, so I don't want to do that. But, yeah, that was so fun because we all knew each other for so long. But you admit you knew Jenny because Jenny did 26 Strong last
yes.
year.
Yes, and so Jenny and I hung out in Hawaii
yeah.
this year.
Oh, my gosh, yes. That was so fun. Well, and I also feel like you know people online, and like you said, until you look them in the eye and like actually have a face-to-face conversation, you're like, is this really the person I've been interacting with?
Because there are people that are
a little bit different
in person, and you're like, huh. It's kind of like a letdown sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was going to be like rainbows and butterflies.
But we're buddies. But that's also can be, like, people having social intimidation or, you know, a little social anxiety. Like, I can do it behind a computer, but maybe I can't do it so well face-to-face.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
What was I going to ask you about something about that? Oh, I want to tell everybody, so Michelle, like, I had surgery in 2013, and we had only known each other for maybe a year on social media, and she sent me flowers! That you and another girl, my friend Ashley, I'm going to say her last name wrong. You might know who she is. Ashley Katsuma. I'm going to say her name wrong. Anyway, I had been friends with her from Twitter and blogs yeah. and all that for a while. And you guys, I mean, I got home to my parents' house to recover, and Glenn's like, here, you got some more flowers. And I'm like, who are those from? And he told me, and I was like, just started crying because these are people I've never met in real life sending me flowers. I mean, that's like, these are real people. These are real friends.
Well, when you're not physically able to be with someone, I feel like, I don't know, you know, it's like the least that I could do for what you were going through, you know, and it was just a way to show you that.
Well, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no.
I think about that all the time. I'm like, that's crazy. We weren't even, like, that close yet. And, you know, you can't do that for everybody, so it made me feel really special. Oh, you know what I was going to ask you when we got on our tangent about meeting in Boston and then Chicago? So, for example, like, when we're in the lobby in Chicago and, like, random people come up to you and they're like, are you NYC Running Mama? Like, how do you handle that? Is that awkward? Or are you just like, oh, so nice to meet you?
Yeah, I get really, like, my husband, I get, like, super embarrassed.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't do well with, mm-hmm. like, in Boston. My mom came up to Boston with me this year, and so we had, like, a couple people had come up. And, like, I just, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like I share the, like, my training, the good, the bad, mm-hmm. like, the really crappy races, and it's hard for me to be like, oh, well, all these people, you know, like, mm-hmm. it's just, I don't know, I get very uncomfortable,
yeah.
but I'm very great, like, I try and be, like, you know, very gracious that they are even coming up to talk, like, it means a lot to me, you know, to someone, like, follows my training, or that mm-hmm. they wanted to thank for whatever, like, if I share something, like, that means a lot to me, and I feel like it's worth it if I, you know, if my ups or downs or whatever have helped someone else, like, that makes it all worthwhile. So.
And I think social media can be so, you know, I talk about this a lot and I think about this a lot, for instance, and you're saying you share the good and the bad as far as your training goes and stuff. For instance, though, last weekend, Glenn and I did a stroller run. It was 10 miles. I had a really good run. I felt great. But, like, on the picture, I made sure to make this, like, disclaimer, like, because I'm, you know, 21 weeks pregnant. Like, I not always feel this great when I'm pregnant. Like, it was just, you know, a random thing. And then Glenn had taken a picture of me pushing the stroller. He's a great Instagram husband. And he's like, oh, you're going to post this, like, you pushed the stroller. And I'm like, no, I'm going to be so real and say I only pushed the stroller for a minute of this run. But I actually feel like social media is kind of turning a little bit where people are getting a little bit more real. I mean, there are people that are always going to post the beautiful things, and that's that. But I think girls like you and me and our, you know, a lot of the friends that we have are internet friends. I'm not embarrassed to say it. We have a million internet friends, right? That's how we meet. I feel like people are kind of turning it around and sharing the good and the bad.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, so, you know, obviously, like, I tend to put, like, my goals out there. Mm-hmm. And, like, so by doing that, like, if the race doesn't go well,
right.
Like, I mean, Boston didn't go well, and so it was like, there's no way to spin this. It mm-hmm. was not a good day, period. Like, it just, and so, you know, but I also try to be careful to just not always, like, have an excuse for things. Like, mm-hmm. there are times that it's just a bad day, or, like, it's, like, I went out to, like, I did a 4-miler, and yes, it was a PR, but simply because how many 4-milers have I ever run?
Right.
I mean, I went out way too fast. Like, I mean, like, stupidly fast. Uh-huh. Like hits on the side of the head. Like, what? Like, you can't run this pace. Like, let alone, like, in your recovery period post-Boston. Like, come on. And so, like, it was not a good race for me, like, at all. And so, it was a PR, but it was a pretty dumb race for me. And so, I tried to, like, you know, share that. Like, yeah, it's not, just because it's PR doesn't mean that it's a good race. So.
And just because you have the experience and have been doing this for a long time doesn't mean you don't make bad decisions sometimes.
Well, especially when they're short races. You feel like you're invincible. You're like, oh, well, it's only 4 miles. Let me go out, you know, way too fast. So
that's exactly how my – it's not even a 10K PR because this race I'm talking about is a 6-mile race. But, like, that's how that race is for me. Like, my first 2 miles were just like, I don't even know if I could have finished a 5K that fast. You know, like, what was I doing? And I'd been running, you know, I'd run probably 12 marathons by that point in my life.
I know. I think, you know, focusing more on the longer races, then mm-hmm. you get, like, almost cocky with the shorter ones.
Yeah, like, you're like, this is 4 miles.
That's no big deal. And then you blow up in a 4-miler.
Really quick, I want to talk about the Ironman. Because I was looking back on that, and I think that's when we kind of became, you know, real friends.
Well, and because Glenn was super helpful. I still remember.
Oh, he was.
He's the one that gave me the tips on where to rent the racing wheels.
Oh.
And I did. And I remember he was just sharing, like, little, like, bits of, like, wisdom. And I like, tucked it all because, like, I have so much respect for both of you.
Oh,
you know,
thanks.
Like, I think you're both, like, super speedy, like, super dedicated, but super smart when it comes to running, you know, or just training in general. And so, like, anything he, like, told me, it was like, I'm tucking that away. And so I used the wheels, and for the Ironman I did. I was going to say not for the Ironman, but yeah, I used them for the, and I mean, I felt like I was flying at times. So
you must have then, so he completed his first and only Ironman so far in September 2012. So were you the following year then? What year? What?
I was.
When
yeah.
did you do
yeah.
it?
The end of July of 2013.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was training for a half Ironman when you were training for the full. And then my race must have been like a week or two before yours. And I remember, like, you know, we were both training for the same kind of race, but I was training for half the distance. But I mean, is it Ryan? Or was it Ryan your younger one?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he wasn't even one.
No. Well, so, okay, so this is what I tell people, because people are like, oh, like, that's crazy. I felt like that was my window of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now that the boys are older, I mean, there's soccer, basketball is going to start. And they're little people. Like, they want to do things. At that time, AJ was, how old was AJ? Two? Just over two.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan was a baby. Like, first of all, where are we going with the two of them?
Right.
In the summer on the weekend. We had a little kiddie pool in the backyard. Like, that was the extent of our weekends during the summer. I was a stay-at-home mom. So I had the flexibility that I could sleep in, like, until they woke up. You know, I mean, not to say that Ryan was sleeping perfectly, but, you know, like, you do, like, there was a little flexibility with, like, catching up on sleep. They were both napping. So I remember three of us would nap together some days. And so I felt like this is it. Like, this is my window. If I want to do it anytime soon, I'm going to do it now. Otherwise, I'm going to have to wait until, you know, they're old enough. Like, they're at the age now where they, especially now that I'm working, like, on the weekend, like, they, if I want to go for a run, like, there are sometimes tears, and I won't go. Like, it's not, like, especially now that I'm not, it's not worth it for me to be away from them. Like, I want to spend time with them on the weekends, because I'm not with them now during the week. And so I felt like he was young, and, like, it would not obviously be, like, I wasn't in, like, top physical shape, but I felt like that I wasn't looking to win. I was looking to just
complete,
to finish. Right. And so I felt like that was my window. It was like, let's just do it. Let's just, you know.
Do you think back, though, at those, I mean, at the insane amount of time you put in, and think, how did I ever even, I mean, I just know, you know, from Glenn doing it, like, the bike rides on Saturday, you know, like, the 6-hour, 7-hour bike rides, like, repeatedly, like, do you look back and think, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, I still am, but I think, you know, once you, I don't know, for me, I feel like once I commit to something, I find this, like, energy and excitement that kind of propels me through it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's good or bad, I don't know, you know, I mean, but, and so, the thought of doing it now, you know, because I had actually toyed with the idea of doing a half Ironman at the end of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just like, no way. Like, that's just not even a thought. Of, like, I can't even fathom that. Right.
Yeah, with your schedule.
I get up super early on Saturday. It was the summer, though, so it was light out at 5 a.m. So most days, like, most weekends, like, I was riding by, like, 4:30. Like, literally on the bike riding. Because the sun was up at 5. And, like, you know, I built up to, I think my longest was like 110-mile ride. So it was like 6.5 hours, maybe seven.
Did you do that by your? Did you do that with a group?
No.
You did it by yourself?
By myself. And so.
Oh my gosh.
I know. It was, but I don't like, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know.
How did you even map out a route for that? Like, did you
loop? I did loops. Yeah. So Staten Island, like, there's a main road, and that's where I do most of my running. It's called Highland Boulevard. And so I would, like, bike. It's like maybe 10 miles down, and then there was another road which was, like, super well paved. And I would go back and forth on there, and then I'd come home because I was breastfeeding. So breastfeed, like, my little break, and then I go back out.
It's
so
crazy. But if you're running, if you're riding that far by yourself, there's probably, like, a little bit of security in, like, doing loops instead of getting out super far.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't do, like, I did Lake Placid, which is, like, super hilly, so I didn't do as many hills as I probably should have, but it was, like, I also didn't want to waste the time to, like, drive
anywhere,
But we went up to Placid 2 weeks before, and so I did, like, a preview of the course. I did it once, and that alone is what helped me on race day, because I started out that the practice weekend being way too cocky on the hills, and literally was off my bike pushing it up the hills and I only did one loop. And I remember being like, how am I going to do two loops of this on race day? Like, it's just, how is that happening?
Right.
And so I went into the race being, like, super cautious and almost, like, scared of doing it twice, and that helped me because my bike splits were 3 minutes apart from each other.
That's one loop awesome. Together.
So I think, like, scaring myself into caution is what worked, because I didn't go out too fast. So.
And that's what so many people do on that bike.
I mean, people were, like, flying by me, and I remember, don't do it. I didn't, which worked out in my favor.
You're so, like, of course you're going to feel good at mile 15, but you have to, like, think about mile 85. And just so everybody knows, didn't you pump in transition?
Yes.
How did you do that? Like, did you have your pump at your bike station, and, like, did they have a special tent for you, or how did that work?
I had two pumps. Luckily, my sister had just given birth, and she bought a new pump because her children are, like, 5 years apart. So she was going to throw away her old pump because it was old. And so I was like, let me use it, because I'm going to not keep the milk anyway. So I had two pumps, one in after the swim and one after the bike.
Okay, so both transitions.
Yeah, both transitions. And I just went into the tent and, you know, just did my business. So.
And so it probably added like a good 5-10 minutes per transition then, didn't it?
Yeah, my second transition was like 12 or 13 minutes long, I think. So,
yeah. But I can't imagine swimming. I mean, maybe getting through the swim to the bike and not
the bike was, I was pretty like, they were hurting.
You
they
needed
hurting
to get.
Yeah, I was just, it was like sweet release at that. I was like, this is.
Yeah.
Because after the bike, I mean, after the swim, this, you know, it was maybe like 4 or 5 hours.
Right.
It was a good 7 hours, I think. 6.5 hours.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, I have definitely, after Marshall, obviously I don't have this issue anymore after Lewis or this next baby, but I have pumped post-marathon in car before, and I understand the hecticness of that, but not in an Ironman transition.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
People are probably like, that lady is amazing.
You know, I had read a story. There was another West Point grad. She's a professional triathlete now. Her name is drawing a blank. She had qualified for Kona before she got pregnant.
Mm.
And it was like early on in the season. Got pregnant, had the baby, did Kona 12 weeks post.
8 weeks post?
I don't even remember. And she actually breastfed her child along the route.
Oh my gosh.
So, and I was like, after hearing her story, and I was like, it's possible. Like, someone has proved that you can train. Do it. Not saying I'm nearly as fast as she is,
right.
But like, you know, if someone else can do it, then like, why can't you, sort of thing.
That's so cool. So back to your work stuff, tell me what a day in the life looks like Monday through Friday real quick.
Well, so typically I'm up around 4. My husband and I get up around 4. We drink our coffee and then I'll go for a run. Come back, shower. Some days I wash my hair. Some days, no, it stinks. During the winter, like, it's so cold out, like, I don't sweat. And so I'm finding some days, even if I had just washed the day before, mm-hmm. I have to, because I'm like, my scalp is like so sweaty that it's like,
gosh.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, do my hair, makeup, dressed, and I try and be out the door around 6:45 or so, sometimes as late as 7. I drive, it's about 10 minutes to the bus stop. It's for me, it's like, it makes the most sense to just, I have a bus stop that's maybe a 5-minute walk from our house, but it's the first stop on Staten. And so where I drive to, there's 3 bus stops that converge. And so I could take any of the 3 buses, and it's the last stop on Staten Island. Before, you know, and they're called express buses, so they only pick up on Staten Island and then they drop off in the city.
Okay.
And then it's the reverse to come home. So I get on the bus usually like 10 after 7, I'd say, maybe a little before or after. And it's the bus ride in the morning could be anywhere from like 50 minutes if there's no traffic. And then if there's traffic, you know, it could be anywhere up to an hour and a half. It just depends. So then I'm at work usually by about 8, and I try and leave about 5:15, 5:30. And then it's just the reverse coming home. So, you know, a good night, I'm home by 7, I'd say.
Okay.
The commute home is much worse. Just getting out of the city is at rush hour is just atrocious. So, you know, and I come home, my husband is like, amazing, because dinner.
Deep into it, yeah.
Usually, dinner is like waiting for me,
aww.
Or like piece of vegan. It's like wrapped in foil. He's been, you know, well. So I'll finish the day first. So,
okay.
So I either will eat quickly if the boys haven't eaten. We eat together. If they have, a lot of times I'll eat like on the floor and play with them and spend some time with them. We've pushed their bedtimes later a bit.
Makes sense.
So anywhere from like 8 to 8:30 is when they go to sleep. And some days I lay with them. It just depends. You know, I mean, if they're like in that needy moment, or like if they're a little overtired, then they typically like obviously want to go to sleep with me. And so I'm it is what it is. Like, of course I want to spend time with them.
And right.
Like, the little time I do, I don't want them to be upset.
Are they in a room together?
We have enough bedrooms in the house mm-hmm. where they can have their own rooms. And that was the plan. Actually, the room I'm sitting in now is now our office. It was supposed to be Ryan's bedroom.
Uh-huh.
But they reached the point where they wanted to share a room.
Uh-huh.
They currently also share a bed because we don't know if this is going to be permanent. And so I don't want to spend the money and get bunk beds if in like a few months they're going to be like, no way. And so we're kind of like at this like limbo, not really.
Hey, if they like it.
It's a full size bed.
Yeah.
It's plenty big. They love it. They like going to sleep together.
Yeah.
So most nights it's a story in bed, or a bath we'll do first, mm-hmm. then a story in bed, and then, you know, give them a kiss goodnight, and that's that. So, and then Paul and I will usually just go right into our bedroom, watch a little TV, and I usually, like, I don't even go to, like, I pass out. Like, it's not even, like, let's shut the light. It's like, I fall asleep with the TV on, sort of, and then it starts over. But back to my husband. Like, he's been, honestly, like, the glue that is holding this all together. And I feel like I can't give him enough credit for everything he does. Like, he really has taken on the... not even the stay-at-home parent, because he's working full time. But he is doing everything I was doing and mm-hmm. while also juggling a job.
Right.
So, like, I leave in the morning and he's cooking them breakfast. He gets them dressed. Like, you know, I do what I can. Like, I'll pack lunches. Mm-hmm. I'll, like, help lay out the clothes. But he's the one that's getting them dressed, getting them out the door, driving them to school, sometimes picking them up. I mean, we have a combination of a babysitter, my mom, my dad, like, we have all these moving pieces that watch the kids. And so, but he, you know, he cooks them dinner, he plays with them, he does homework with them. Like, that's all on him. And his outlook on it is, like, that I sacrificed my career for a few years mm-hmm. to help him kind of, you know, buy the company and get started. And so he feels like now it's my turn to build my career and start, you know, start myself in the corporate world again. So,
and that's all about communication before you got started. Like, we all know what's going to happen here. Like, this is how it's going to have to work.
Yeah.
Is he working from home?
He does most of the time.
Yeah. So he gets everything taken care of. They're out of the house at your mom's or daycare or school or wherever. And then he works and then he goes and gets them.
Yeah, so some days he gets them. And then some days, it's whoever is watching them will pick them up.
Oh, or can bring them home.
Yeah, so, you know, they're both, AJ's in school full-time. And
in September,
Ryan will be in pre-K 4, which is full-time as well.
Okay.
So, that part, they'll be in school 8 to 2. So it makes it...
Who picks them up at 2 then?
It'll be my mom one day, my dad one day, and then he may just do it the other 3 days. You know, because they're at the age now, too, where they together a lot, you know. I mean, they understand, like, oh, daddy needs to make a phone call, like, put the TV on for a half an hour sort of thing.
That's so nice. Yeah, they're old enough. I mean, it's when they're, like, 15 months, like my Lewis's age, like, that's when you can't get anything done.
No.
Because you don't have to trail them anymore. You don't have to, like, make sure they're not choking on things and, you know.
Since we're at that stage, we're like, so maybe we start talking
about... So let's have another one.
It's like just when things start to get like calm and like, you know, it's like, but it makes me miss, you know, the older they get, it's like I miss them being that little. And so it's like, we're kind of like, we want to, we're just not sure of the
timing.
You
do think you want to have another?
I do. Yeah. So I just feel like my position I'm in now, I know is not where I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Much more than a year. Like I want to do something else. I want... potentially a position that has a little more flexibility with working from home.
Uh-huh.
And so I feel like I'm hesitant to take that step before I am settled into a more flexible position, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So we're not sure.
I feel like a lot of companies are giving that flexibility to work from home at least one, maybe 2 days
a
week.
You know, it's my company, that option is there. Just the position I'm in and my my boss like is not ready yet to be on board for that.
So yeah.
Like, that's fine. Like I'm not, but when the time comes, like I'm definitely, that's going to be a prerequisite I look for
yeah.
in this position. And my company is huge. And so I know I could stay within my company and just move, you know, and, so that's my plan.
We have to move along. What? I know. We could talk forever, right? I could do another 2-part episode like I did with Eric and Sarah, or we could just record another one another time. So I have to ask you, what are you into right now? What do you have time for other than work and running and your family?
So two things. One, I'm finally on the Game of Thrones
bandwagon. Oh, okay.
Like I said, like I tend to not want to jump into things that seem the craze because I'm like, oh, whatever. Plus, I'm also cautious. Like, I'm not a fan of shows that I have to wait every week to see.
Yeah.
Because I'm also like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to watch it next week. And then once I miss an episode, I'm like, screwed. So we finally started Game of Thrones. And it's been like, we are obsessed. We
watch
like Friday night, Saturday. I'm staying up way too late. But it's like, there's a time and like, I don't need to get up early. So we're up to season 5 already, and I'm like, it's amazing. Do you watch Game of Thrones?
Glenn does. He watches it on his iPad because I don't watch it.
There are a lot of scenes I just can't watch. Like, I don't like the fighting. I don't like the bloody, like, I can't stomach it. And so I spend a lot of the show like this, and it's okay to look because I can't. Like, it's too bloody for me.
Yeah. I don't know that I would like it. It's that, The Walking Dead, which he's not really into anymore, but I don't think he thinks I would like Game of Thrones, and I trust his opinion on if I would. He usually watches it when I'm, like, watching The Bachelor or something. You know, watching stupid TV, he's watching something that's probably actually pretty good quality.
Yeah. No, it's been good. I mean, the only thing is, like, we watch it together, so.
Yeah. I do like getting into shows together. So
yeah.
That's
great.
You can bond over TV.
I typically, you know, like, I do a lot of treadmill running, when he travels, you know, because, like, the boys are sleeping, so I can't watch the show then, like, I have to wait for him, there's plenty of, like, my guilty pleasure shows that I watch, so it's all good. And then the other thing I'm loving right now is not marathon training. It's a very welcome break, very, very welcome. For my entire family. I mean, I know, because it's a lot for Paul, too. I mean, I get up on a Saturday, and even though I try and be out early, I'm still gone for 2 to 3 hours.
Right.
And so, you know, so it's been very, very nice to just have lazy Saturday mornings. And it's
so
like,
nice.
And if you feel like running a few miles, even if it's like the heat of the day, like you're only running miles.
Yeah, and you're just like running easy.
Yeah. I've done one speed workout since Boston, and I think it was too soon. It was 5-6 weeks post, but I didn't recover very well from it, so I was like, we'll take another break.
That is, like, one of my favorite things about being pregnant is there's no pressure to, like, run hard or long or whatever on Saturdays, and I shouldn't say pressure when I'm not pregnant, but there is, and it's because I like it. It's because I like how I feel after I do it.
Yeah. Well, so I was trying, you know, I think I was trying to, when was it? I was on a run, and I was just thinking of, like, basically, well, I was trying to decide about running a fall marathon. I'm like, oh, should I just sign up for one? Like, but see, the thing for me is I don't like just running races. Like, if I'm just, I'm going to sign up for a marathon, like, the joy I get from it is the training, is, like, having, like, breakthrough where you're like, holy crap, like, look at the, that is where my, like, true happiness with running comes from, is, like, pushing those boundaries, and, like, just training to run, for me, like, I love running, but, like, if I'm going to do, like, long runs, and if I'm going to put in the time and the energy to train, like, I want it to be training hard, to have those, like, breakthrough moments or, like, breakthrough runs. And so that's why I'm, like, I don't even want to sign up for one until I know for sure that I'm prepared to train hard. Because it's the training that makes me happy. It's not necessarily just, like, saying, oh, I just ran my X number of marathons. Like, I don't get much out of that.
Yeah. Well, and so that's good, though, considering, like, your Boston experience, like, wasn't the race time that you had trained for, but, like, your joy came out of the training. Like, you knew you were there.
Yeah. And that's, like, it's
you were fit.
Race sucked, but I was, could not have been, like, happier with the training, honestly, with everything. And, like, that just makes me more, because I'm like, if when I'm prepared and ready to train again, I could be in as good or better shape and have that breakthrough race.
Right.
Which I truly feel like has not happened for me yet. Like, it has for the half. Like, I think the New York City half was my breakthrough half. Like, without a doubt. I don't think that's happened yet for me for the marathon. And that's exciting. Like, that makes me, I'm like, it's out there. And I'm eventually going to get it when I'm ready. Like, and so.
On the right day.
Yes.
It's so, that's what's so hard about marathon training is because you can be so fit and so prepared. And if one thing is not working right, or like the weather or whatever, just a stomach issue, it can just be all the shit. And it's like your training was there, you know, that's what's so hard about the marathon. But you can use that training as mental.
Yeah.
You knew where you were when you trained for the next one.
So, like, I'm signed up for a few halves, and they're Philly half. Like, that's a fast half. So, there's a huge difference between training for a half and training for a marathon.
Time-wise.
So, I'm like, maybe I do Boston 2016 or 17 as, like, my next marathon.
And you love Boston.
I love Boston.
You've raced well in Boston.
I feel like because Boston forces me to go out cautiously.
Yeah.
And that is the way that I race well to begin with. And that's why I like the New York City half, because you have to go out cautiously because you got all the hills. But then, you know, whereas like a flat race or like Wineglass, which I ran in the fall, like I went out goal pace almost from the beginning. And I don't think I race as well that way. So
yeah.
I think that's, you know, plus I love the crowds in Boston. I run better with, I mean, I know I do. And so, yeah.
And if you train right for Boston, the course is hard. I mean, it is. I think it's a really hard course. But if you train right and your quads are ready for that and everything, you can actually execute really strongly, you know? Was your Boston, not this year, the year before, did you run like 3:13 and then you ran a 3:11 at Wineglass or something like that?
Well, Boston was, it was 3:15.
Okay, 3:15.
Wineglass was 3:12.
Okay. And then now 3:12 is your PR. Yeah. I'm with you on putting your goals out though, because if people see your training paces, like, they're going to know kind of what you're shooting for.
You go out and do, like, a long run with, like, 10 miles in the middle. Uh-huh. You know that my coach, like, has me do them faster than marathon pace.
Uh-huh.
But you see the paces and you're not like, oh, well, she's going to go for, like, a 3:15. Like,
right.
No, I'm going for, like, my goal has been to break sub, like, 3:10. But, like, honestly, like, I was going for, like, a 3:06, 3:07.
Totally.
And, like, I truly felt in my heart that was where I was at. If I had a good day and if the weather, like, I think that, you know, would have been, like, feasible for me, you know, if I raced well. But, so that's why I'm, like, I share my paces because I'm not looking to hide anything. This is what I'm going to run, you know? So
there is a certain amount of pressure on race day, though, when it's kind of out there, you know, and you know people are tracking you. But it's kind of a good pressure because you're like, I'm gonna do this. Like, I have people are watching me, and it gives you like a, I don't know, not like a platform. At the end of the day, nobody else truly goes to bed caring about what you ran. But I think it helps.
I think it does too. And I remember not this Boston, but the previous Boston. Like, I sped up, like, you know, as the race went on, I remember thinking, like, imagining, like, friends that were following me. That must have been, like, excited. Like, I was, you know, picking up the pace.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that made me, like, happy that they were probably happy, you know.
Right.
And then this year, my poor mom was, like, because I stopped in the, I mean, I had, like, a 35-minute, I think, like, 5K split.
Uh-huh.
And so the only thing going through my mind was, like, how Paul and my mom were probably, like, what happened?
Wrong. Yeah.
Like, yeah. I debated finding a phone to call them, but I was like, if I hear their voice, I'm not gonna. I'm gonna
cry.
That's gonna be it for me. So they're just gonna have to keep tracking split. So
they know. They know that you'll. They know you'll get to the finish line, and they can find out then. Yeah, that is so hard, especially a race like Boston. Like, no, they're not gonna see you. You know, like a smaller race, Paul could be like hopping around on the bike or whatever. So, okay, any books you're reading? You don't have time for books.
No, so I had all these, like, lofty plans of, like, because I'm on the bus for so long.
Oh, that's what I was wondering about, yeah.
But honestly, like, so, like, I do a lot of, like, spreadsheets and numbers, and, like, my brain is fried. Like, my eyes hurt from looking at the computer. That, like, the last thing I want to do, like, I don't even text. I try not to check my phone. Like, I put on my headphones, and I close my eyes.
Oh, really?
Like, so if I could even, like, most days I nap both ways, like maybe 15, 20 minutes.
Really?
But like that's, you know, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I don't do any reading.
What do you listen to?
Various stations on Pandora. Just depends on the mood. Like sometimes it's like, so I love this song, Skinny Love.
Oh, you know, I love that song.
By Birdie. So one of her channels I listen to because it's just very like soothing.
Totally.
I also like oldies music. I listen to a lot of oldies music when I run. It reminds me of like growing up and my childhood. It's a mix of music though. Like I'm really like my marathon playlist is like literally like current music, oldies, slow songs. It's like any songs that just make me happy. I listen to. And it's not even about the pace or whatever. Because if I know words and like I'm singing along in my head, like that's all I need. So.
How do you feel about that, running marathons with headphones? Do you like doing that?
I do. I mostly do. Yeah.
See, it makes me nervous. Like, I have not run a marathon with headphones in years. But sometimes, like, when I have a really good workout and I know that I'm, like, feeling good and that, honestly, the music has something to do with that, sometimes I'm like, man, this would be kind of nice to do in a marathon. But part of me is like, would it distract me from, like, what I'm trying to accomplish? You're running fast, you're working really hard out there. Like, do you think it distracts you at all?
No, because there's a lot of times that I feel like I zone out, that I don't even know what music I'm listening to. Like, I'm completely zoned, like not even. But it's definitely like a crutch. I know it is. Like,
that's okay though.
Yeah, I mean, if I walk out the door without headphones, I feel, like, naked. Like, I feel like something is missing. I'm so used to it now, so. But I told you, like, I listen to your podcast and Runners Connect now. Like, occasionally on my runs, it's a nice way to, you know,
it's a different, listen. It's a different, yeah. Especially for an easy run. Like, I wouldn't want to listen to a podcast if I'm doing, like, a tempo run or anything like that. But, like, for just, like, an easy run, if I want to go run for an hour, hour and a half, like, podcast makes it go by so fast for me.
Yeah, no, so that's, I've started doing that, and it's been a welcome, because I tend to listen to the same music, you know, too, when I run, so it's a nice welcome change.
Podcast, do you like any comedy podcasts?
Your podcast was...
Go ahead.
I don't listen, like, I'm fairly, like, I was against the podcast. Runners Connect, but I feel like running podcasts, it's like, it's running talk, so, like, obviously I'm going to love it, you know? But, like, in general, like, other podcasts, I'm, like, I'm still very, like, hesitant to, like,
I have a hard time finding ones that I really like, honestly, that I enjoy listening, which is why I created this in the first place, because I was, like, envisioning, like, what I wanted to listen to in my ears, like, girls talking, fun conversations, and obviously we talk about running. So I was like, I guess I'm just gonna have to like make it up then. But you can get really particular about podcasts too. Like, I don't know, my voice might be driving somebody crazy and they're like, I can't listen to that, but you know what I mean, because of certain things. But I was gonna suggest, if you like any comedy, I don't know if it would be your thing, but I listened to You Made It Weird by Pete Holmes. His episodes are like two and a half hours, but I only listen to the episodes of guests that I know of. Oh, they're too long. You don't listen to them in one sitting. Like, for instance, he had Andy Samberg on.
Okay.
You know who that is?
From
SNL. And I listened to it in like four different times. Like, went for a 30-minute run, mowed the lawn.
Yeah. Crazy. But who has time to listen to that length of a...
I don't know that anybody would listen to it all
at once
unless you were, like, on an airplane or something.
Right.
But he's kind of funny. So anyway, my point is his podcast, I listened to Tina, Runners Connect. And then I've been listening to some other girls, you know, in shows to take notes for my show, but I don't listen to a ton of them either. Last question. What are your upcoming goals, race-wise, life-wise?
I have a couple of shorter races at the end, like towards the end of the summer. When you're in the midst of marathon training, like, I had such a good half that it was like, I'm going to sign up for every race distance and get new PRs, because that's the shape I was in then. I'm not in that shape now, but
right.
I signed up for a 10-miler and a 10K. So I've set PRs in the half in those distances, so I feel like I should be able to set, you know, but that's not till the end of the summer. Well, we're going to Alaska in 2 weeks, so my goal is to, like, relax and unwind and just, like, veg out and run with Paul a lot, because we have babysitters while we're there. So.
Yes, you deserve that.
So just spend some good time with family. So
that's pretty awesome. Much,
yeah. So very much looking forward to that.
Do you have the goal long term to break 3 hours in the marathon? I'm asking because I have the goal, like, I want to do it. Like, I feel like if I ever break it, like, I'm like, done. I did what I wanted to do. Like, I broke 3 hours. Yeah. And I know we're similar speeds.
Yeah. So, it's interesting. I was part of a panel, a Strava event a couple of days ago, and one of the speakers there was a question from the audience. Someone said she has a friend who, like, continually is, like, around 3:05. Mm. Goal is to break 3. Like, you know, I forgot what it was around, but anyway, she was asking, like, is this possible, like, sort of thing, and he was saying, if you could run 3:05, you can break 3, that it's a lot of times, it's, like, that mental block, and that she needs to spend time running with, like, 250 marathoners, 245 marathoners, and she'll gain the confidence to break 3, and, like, you know, and so, I feel like I've learned my lesson with trying to shoot too much or take too much off at one time.
Mm, right.
I did that a few years ago, backfired, and so I'm very cautious right now to kind of just see where the training unfolds and, like, where I am. But I do feel like if I have, like, a couple of healthy cycles and, like, keep working at it, like, I saw a lot of time come off my goal, my paces, in the last year. Like, major time drops.
Yeah.
So, I'm not doing anything differently.
I like how you do that, though, because, so Glenn has kind of scared me into, not scared me, I don't want to use the word pressure either, but he has an ability to get in my head and give me this confidence, like, you can run sub-3, like, no problem. Like, I know your ability. I know how you can work, and I know you're willing to work hard and willing to hurt.
Yeah.
So it gets in my head, and I kind of say, well, I want to do these littler chunks, kind of like what you've been doing recently. Jenny Poore is really good at doing that.
Yeah.
It's less stressful that way. You're not like, oh, I'm trying to run a 3:03 marathon, and that's going to be, like, the hardest I can run, you know, instead of running, like, training for, like, a 3:06 and running to the best of your ability, but still have, you know, you have more to go. But he gets in my head, and, you know, in my head, I'm like, well, I want to have another baby. I want to do this. I want to do that. So I want to take this big chunk off right now, you know, so that I can get it done and then move on to the next thing, like have a baby and then race another marathon. But, man, taking smaller chunks like you're talking about is so much less stressful.
Yeah, I mean, that's, like, I found I was so wrapped up in that breaking 3:10 for so long that it consumed me, and it made me, like, a crazy person, like, literally a crazy person. And I felt like anything, once I started to see the paces move away from the 7:15 pace, I quit. Mentally shut down, quit. And so, like, I feel like, for me, I need to just have a kind of, like, run what the body is telling you to run, And whatever that plays out to be, plays out to be.
Yeah.
Now, in training, it's different. I mean, like, I have very specific paces, like, 5-mile tempo, this is the range, go, sort of thing. But on race day, it's much more fluid. And for me, that's worked. And I think that's why I've had better success the last, like, a year or so. Just kind of, like, letting go of the pace and just letting my body run, you know. And, like, the New York City half, I mean, I ran a minute to 2 minutes faster than the range that my coach gave me. And, like, I feel like if I had been holding on to those paces, I wouldn't have run as fast. You know, I would have been like, oh, well, he said I have to run, like, this pace. He gave me a range, but it was very, like, kind of, there were caveats to it. Like, stay here, but you could, you know, so.
Tina talked about that a lot in my interview with her, too, like, because I asked her what she was planning to try to run at London, and she was like, well, really, I'm in shape for anywhere between, like, I think she said, like, a 234 to 239, when you're that fast, like, that's a really big range.
That's a really big range.
That's not like saying I'm in shape for a 315 to a 319, like, you know.
Right.
And she was very, like, I listen to my body and, you know, whatever's happening that day. And I think if we all did that a little bit more, we'd probably race a lot stronger, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I started doing that because I had a series of craptastic races that just, like, that my training was better than the race. And, like, I was like, something has to change. I can't train any harder. I can't run more miles. Like, I've done all that and it's not working. Like, I need to do something. And
right.
So I started this approach. And the first marathon that I ran without seeing my pace was, like, frightening. I was terrifying to be like, what if I go out too fast? But for me, it's the opposite. I tend to go out much more conservative because I'm scared then of going out too fast. And then I'm not a slave to the pace. I'm just like, what will be sort of thing.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so I guess we have to wrap up because we're closing in on the end of our time, but you have to come back on again because we could just keep talking for another hour about everything. We'll have to make some more focused topics because we had to get through the military and all the,
I mean,
all the big stuff, but then you can have a second separate show about the smaller kind of chit-chatty stuff about all the running and all that good stuff. So, I really appreciate you coming on though.
No, thank you for having me.
And enjoy the rest of your day with your boys and the cousins.
Oh, yes. I'm going to go jump in the pool. Thanks, Lindsay. I'll talk to you later.
See ya.
Okay. Bye.
All right, everybody. That wraps up episode 16. Thank you so much for tuning in today. And don't miss next week's episode. Every week on Friday is when they drop. So have a great weekend, and I'll see you next time.